to the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And I'm Howie Silbiger. Welcome to the program. It is a pleasure to be here with you, and I hope that you are happy to be here with me. I know you are. And we have a lot to talk about. There's been a lot going on. We have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, and let's get this show on the road. If you want to reach me, you want to talk to me, you can do so. It's quite simple. You could just dial 1-877-669-1292. That's 1-877-669-1292. I'll put you on the air. We could talk about anything you want to talk about. That is the way the show rolls. We could talk about anything. So 1-877-669-1292. I'll address any topic that you want me to address. It doesn't necessarily have to be what we're talking about, but generally, I like to talk about what we're talking about. Otherwise, it seems kind of ridiculous to do a show and not talk about what we're talking about, but that's okay. If that's what you want to do, we could do that too. 1-877-669-1292 is the number to call. 1-877-669-1292. So Yahya Sinwar is dead. I should be a lot happier about the fact that a terror leader, one of the founders of Hamas, the last surviving founder of Hamas, was blown up the other day by the State of Israel. I should be overjoyed by this news, as should the rest of the world. We should all be overjoyed by the news that another terrorist scumbag is off the earth, is no longer a threat to anybody. But I'm not. And I'm not for various reasons. If killing Sinwar stopped the violence and stopped the terrorism, then that would have been enough to celebrate. But unfortunately, like rats, when you kill one terrorist, another five will jump up to his place. And this is what we are going to see with Hamas and other terror groups that Israel is taking out the leadership. We've done this before. I don't know, nobody seems to be mentioning this, but this is not the first time Israel has done targeted assassinations of political leaders in the terror groups. It's not the first time they've stuck bombs into the faces of leaders of terror groups. And more leaders just came up out of the woodwork. It didn't seem to stop the terror. It didn't seem to stop the killings. It didn't seem to stop the destruction and the murders. Now, if that happens, now that Yahya Sinwar, the last remaining founder of Hamas, is dead, if that leads to the stopping of the murders and the assassinations and the annihilation of the Jewish people, then we should all celebrate. This should be a national holiday. This should be a religious holiday. But we know that there are other players in the region that are just as hell-bent as Sinwar was to destroying Israel. We know that Iran is funding this whole thing. Iran proxies are the ones who are causing trouble and trying to kill Israelis. And we know Iran is the big problem. Just last week, Iran tried to murder the Israeli prime minister. They sent a drone to his country house, tried to blow him up while he was in bed. He wasn't there, thankfully. So why has Israel not attacked Iran? What are they waiting for? Why is the Iranian government free to lob missiles into Israel and terrify the Israeli population and not feel any retaliatory force? One has to wonder what's going on there. But we understand that there's world pressure for Israel not to retaliate. We understand that there's world pressure for Israel to stand down. We understand that the world hates Israel. Just this week, Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee for president of the United States of America, stated pretty bluntly that Israel's committing a genocide in Gaza, a vicious blood libel repeated by the vice president and current candidate for president of the United States of America. We are at a time where Jews are in grave danger, where the state of Israel is in grave danger. We have fortresses that have been built around our Jewish buildings right across the world. We have armed guards standing vigil over our Jewish institutions. We are spending hundreds of millions of dollars globally to protect ourselves from radicalism and crazies that are running through the streets screaming death to the Jews. Screaming death to the Jews unchallenged. Unchallenged by governments, unchallenged by the police, and even in most cases, unchallenged by the Jewish community. I was raised in a family that believed strongly that if you are attacked, then the only solution you have is to attack back, is to defend yourself. If you know that you are going to be attacked, this is what Judaism says, then it is your duty to defend yourself even preemptively. So why are we failing in our duties? Why are we failing in protecting ourselves? How are we failing, you may ask? It's a great question. Glad you asked it. We are not teaching our children how to defend themselves. We are not teaching our children self-defense, physical self-defense, or ideological self-defense. We have shunned, for the most part, a vast majority of Jews have shunned their religion. And lost the structure that religion gives people. When it comes to defending yourself, when it comes to defending your ideology, when it comes to understanding the Jewish connection to Israel, we have lost that. And we live in a world where social media rules. And so the more money you have for Facebook ads and for Instagram ads and for YouTube ads, the more your message gets out there. But somehow the Jewish community prefers to not give money for public relations, but prefers to rely on diplomacy. Let's talk to the Jew haters, and maybe they'll like Jews again. Let's talk to the Jew haters. Maybe we can convince them that hitting Jews is wrong. Let's talk to the Jew haters. Let's negotiate. I've heard this my entire life. When I was 17 years old, I started an organization called Save All Jews Everywhere. The idea of the organization was to save all Jews everywhere. We're very altruistic. We wore our hearts on our sleeves. Our first activity in the early 90s, our first activity was to have a rally in front of the American consulate in Montreal in defense of Jonathan Pollard, demanding the release of Jonathan Pollard from American prison. We called him a Jewish national hero at the time. We went out, we had one of the pulpit rabbis come out. There was another rabbi that was supposed to show up that didn't show up. And we got lambasted, literally lambasted, by the organized Jewish community, B'nai B'rith, Canadian Jewish Congress at the time, Federation, all condemned us for standing on the street corner and demanding the release of Jonathan Pollard. Our next event, that didn't deter us, our next event was a boycott of the Montreal Gazette. We boycotted the Gazette because we felt that they were anti-Israel and that they were. And once again, we were lambasted and condemned by the Jewish community. We went out and we had a march against anti-Semitism in Canada. We walked from Concordia University to McGill University, where we knew that the KKK was handing out the Klansman newspaper at the Red Path Library at McGill University. We were 100% aware that this was happening. A couple of radical groups, a couple of Jewish activists from New York showed up to join us in our march, knowing that the KKK was handing out the Klansman newspaper and knowing that tough Jews had to be there to confront them. Once again, condemned universally by every Jewish organization in the world. And so on and so on. And any time a young person got up and worked outside the Jewish Federation box or outside the organized Jewish community box, they were crushed, they were reported to the police, as I was multiple times by B'nai B'rith and Canadian Jewish Congress. And they were turned in, and they were destroyed. I'm resilient. Nobody's going to destroy me. I took it to the airwaves. I became a broadcast journalist, and I started expressing my opinions on the air. But it was quite interesting to me that the only opposition we ever faced, even when we were taking down the Muslim Daily News, which was daily posting virtual hatred against the Jewish people, even when we were instrumental and uninstrumental, we were the only ones fighting them and the only ones to take them down. We got condemned. So you wonder now, why are there no young Jews out there fighting for Israel? Why is everyone cowering away? Why is it so quiet on the streets? Why aren't thousands of Jews marching down the streets? We used to see thousands of Jews march down the streets when it came to demanding the release of the Soviet Jews. We used to see thousands of Jews marching down the streets. But now bombs are falling on Israel, on the heads of innocent men, women, and children. And the streets are quiet. The Jews are not protesting. There's no loud protests. There's no riots. There's no news coverage of Jews being angry. Heck, we're not even doing a vigil inside our buildings like we do, hiding in our hovels, afraid of ourselves. All we see are guards standing in front of the Jewish buildings, barricades put up, streets blocked off for holidays, ID cards issued to synagogue goers so that nobody else could possibly get into the building. This is all we're seeing. There's no anger. There's no upset. There's no connection between the Jews of the diaspora and the Jews of Israel. And as much as we love to say there is a connection, as much as we love to say that the Jews of the diaspora love the state of Israel and the Jews of the diaspora want to protect the state of Israel and the Jews of the diaspora care about the state of Israel, when push comes to shove, and push has come to shove, and we're at shove right now, the Jews of the diaspora have abandoned Israel. Yeah, send your $15 or $18 in. Buy a tree. Buy a bond for $100. And oh, I support Israel. Get out in the street and demand that the Canadian government do something to help stop this war of genocide against the Jewish state. Stop allowing the Canadian government to peg the state of Israel as the villains rather than the victims. Stop our crazy Prime Minister of Canada from siding with the terrorists. The power is in the hands of the people. But if the people remain silent, then they have forsaken their power. They have given up their power. They have forfeited their power. And the power means nothing if the politicians take you for granted. They are never going to change their ways. And if you keep giving them reason to take you for granted, then there's no reason for them to change. There is a riding in Montreal that has been liberal. It's been liberal for 86 straight years. 86 years. It's a predominantly Jewish riding that has been liberal for 86 years. Imagine. Even the last 10 years and the last 20 years has been liberal. And the Jews in the riding, you ask them, they say, no, we're going to vote liberal. My parents voted liberal. My grandparents voted liberal. Why would I vote liberal? Because the Liberal Party has changed. It's become a woke, crazy party. It's been a party where the leader of the party, the Prime Minister of Canada, is on video telling somebody that he can't say the word mankind. You have to say the word people kind because mankind is sexist. It is a crazy, strange, weird world we're living in. And yet, the Jewish community keeps capitulating. Oh, but the MP's Jewish. Yeah, but he doesn't do anything. But he's Jewish. Okay, he works hard. He works hard. He's a good guy. But is he really the guy you want representing you? Is he really the guy you want to be the MP defending and talking about the Jewish community? Is this the guy? He might work hard. He might be very, very friendly, and he might know everybody in the community. But is this really the guy you want there? The guy who's helping, currently helping, keeping Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, in power? He could have walked away from his position. He could have left his party when his party decided to vote against Israel, when his party decided to vote to not send arms to Israel, when his party decided to vote in favor of Hamas, when his party decided to bring in a Nazi war criminal into parliament and give him a standing ovation. There were plenty of opportunities for these Jewish MPs, and he's not the only one, there's a few of them, for these Jewish MPs to have walked away. But they chose to stay. They chose their plum positions, they chose their salaries over the best interest of the Jewish community, over the best interest of their constituents. And these people keep getting reelected over and over and over again. And I don't understand why. I just don't get it. I've been asking this question for years. This is not a new question. I've been asking this question for years. We see the same story in the United States, where Jews predominantly vote Democrat, even though the Democrats have been the worst people for the worst party for the Jewish people in history. There's never been a good time for Jews under Democratic rule. Yet time and time and time again, Jews go out and vote Democrat. Once again, it makes no sense. It's totally irrational. It's totally illogical. And I don't understand why it happens, but that's what happens. And maybe someone could explain it to me, because I don't get it. 1-877-669-1292 is the number to call. 1-877-669-1292. Maybe you could explain it to me, because I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Why would Jews keep voting for the parties and for the politicians that don't do anything to help them? Why would they keep voting for politicians and parties that actively work against them and against their interests? It doesn't make any sense. But we are at a point in history where this has been happening for almost a century. And I don't get it. And I look around and I speak to people and I talk to a lot of people over the course of a week. And I see a lot of people. And I ask the question over and over again, and everyone looks at me like I'm crazy. What are you talking about, Howie? And when I explain it to them, they still look at me like I'm nuts. And they won't accept the fact that their beloved party is no longer the party of their fathers, no longer the party of their grandfathers. It has changed. It has evolved. It has become a woke party who's not interested in status quo. They're interested in the reset, the great reset. Justin Trudeau said it 5 years ago. He said it publicly that he was going to use COVID to initiate the great reset of society. Now, you could interpret that any way you want, but the interpretation of the great reset of society is more socialism, less individualism, larger government, more taxes, more social services. Now, that may sound great, but it's not so great when your salaries don't increase, but your taxes do. It's not so great when inflation triples and quadruples the prices of your staple foods. It's not so great when it's unaffordable, literally unaffordable, to buy a house in the country or anywhere. Anywhere in the city, in the country, you can't buy a house. Then suddenly, this great reset doesn't sound so good. When the price of putting gas in your car is astronomically high, and you see your savings, what savings? Who could afford to save today? You see your salary at the end of the month at $0, and you say, where did my paycheck go? And that's how majority of people are living in the country. Paycheck to paycheck and barely surviving on the paycheck they're getting. This is an extreme. This is an extreme that we're at. We've reached the extreme limit. And there's only one way to get out of it. And that's a change of government. That's getting rid of the bums that are there who are causing these problems and bringing in some other people and hoping that the other people have a plan to reverse things. Now, will things ever get back to the way they were, where your salary was able to purchase, your salary had some purchasing power? Who knows? In 10 years, we've gotten to this point. Who knows how long it's going to take to reverse this or to increase salaries or to get the economy balanced again? Who knows? We have a prime minister who years ago said, well, you know, what do you talk about balancing the economy? The economy balances itself. So who cares about balancing the economy? What a great attitude. So yes, we live in a society that is falling apart, that has become increasingly more racist, more xenophobic, and more anti-Semitic, or anti-Jewish, as we like to say on the show. And we have to figure out what to do. We have to figure out how to survive this. As human beings, as Jews, as people, how do we survive this? So as a Jew, there's very little options. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on security for our buildings. We're spending tons of money. That money could be going into education. That money could be going into a lot of other things that it's not going into. It's going into security. It's kind of a ridiculous situation to be in. And I know the concept, the thought of going to Israel while bombs are falling on the heads of Israelis, launched by Iran, by Hezbollah, by Hamas to a certain extent, is unfathomable. But it might be the only choice that Jews have in North America and in Europe. It might be the only path for survival of the Jewish people. In fact, I would venture to say it is the only path for survival of the Jewish people. That eventually, Jews living in the diaspora are going to have to realize that their stay is over. Welcome. They've overlived their stay, and it's time to go. Now it's only going to be a matter of time before this escalates even worse than it is. We see the escalation in Israel as we kill the leaders of the organizations. We see the escalation of violence in Israel. We could only imagine how it's going to escalate in North America when it's left unchecked and unstopped by the governments, by the police, and by any sense of authority that could stop this. We see rallies and riots in the streets, yelling and screaming for globalizing the Intifada, which is essentially code for attack Jews wherever they are. We see this over and over and over again, and we see governments remaining quiet. We see police officers remaining quiet. We see everybody remaining quiet, and we don't see the Jewish community causing a huge fuss. Years ago, my grandmother told me that there was this old philosophy from the old country. It's called Sei Still. That's Yiddish for keep quiet. The idea was when the Jew haters came, that if you don't oppose them, they'll do what they want and then they'll leave and the rest of you will be okay. But if you oppose them, then they will stay and they will fight with you and continue to fight with you until you are destroyed. So she said that old European Jews believed that just remaining quiet, and just doing your thing and remaining quiet and not shaking the boat will result in people leaving you alone. It's not true. And if that seems to be the philosophy that runs today, it's not true. By not reacting, by not answering, by remaining silent, you are essentially showing your weakness. When you show your weakness to a bully, when you show your weakness to an enemy, that enemy is going to take your weakness and use it against you. You must fight back. You must respond to every attack. You must be strong. You must be Maccabees. I'm Howie Silberger. Thank you for joining me. I'll see you again next show. Have a great one.